Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. In Odyssey Station. The Score!
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning, Chicago. It's great to be back inside the clubhouse right here at 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, and we will intentionally walk you through the next 2 hours talking White Sox, talking Cubs, from 9 to 11, as we do every Saturday morning, 52 weeks a year. Hello, Bruce. How you doing?
David, welcome back. We had nice contributions from our good friends Mark Grody and Mike Esposito, but it's nothing like having you back home in the driver's seat as we proceed along toward the All-Star break, getting close, just past the one-third mark of the baseball season, and plenty to talk about today. We will talk very much about Tony La Russa and the Chicago White Sox, also the Chicago Cubs, and anything you want as far as baseball goes at 312-644-6767. That's our show number. That's our show text line. And David, it was an interesting few days with the Chicago White Sox. Where would you like to begin?
Well, I think that is where everybody would like to begin. Just a couple housekeeping things, Bruce. I think when you look at, you know, what's happened this week, it's been an eventful one in both sides of town. You have the Cubs at Yankee Stadium with Anthony Rizzo, the opponent this weekend. You've got the Rangers in town for the White Sox. But everything about the context of the conversation surrounding Chicago baseball changed, I think, you know, Thursday when Tony La Russa made the decision to walk Trey Turner intentionally with a 1-2 count to make way for Max Muncy. And when you make that decision, and Max Muncy made it look like a foolish one by homering, and the three-run homer in a two-run game. So the White Sox lose 11-9. That decision backfires. Tony La Russa doubles down on it. You were there to hear him do that. We will get to all of it. We'll hear from Ozzie Guillen. But I think we want to hear from listeners as well, the audience. How bad of a mistake was that to you, the Sox fan? How bad of a mistake was it to you, the baseball fan? 312-644-6767. Bruce, we were very tough on Tony La Russa during the Mully and Haw show on Friday morning. I think he received a lot of criticism throughout the day, not only on Sports Talk Radio, but in bars and living rooms and all over baseball at Guaranteed Rate Field. So I guess I would turn it back to you with the question. You were there yesterday. How do you think the Sox responded, and how long will this controversy linger?
Well, I think the controversy is more about Tony La Russa than it is about what Tony La Russa did, okay? Because there still seems to be a lot of pushback as to Tony La Russa being the manager. I feel that, you know, regardless of results, La Russa is always going to be the center of attention as far as the fact that the assumption by Chicago White Sox fans from the beginning to the end, and it's probably a true assumption, is that La Russa was hired by Jerry Reinsdorf, not by the entire baseball management team. And I think from that point on, from that very beginning, that didn't sit well with White Sox fans. That didn't sit well with critics. That didn't sit well with sports radio hosts. The fact that, again, yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but not only did it not sit well with everyone.
You're not that sorry.
But it didn't sit well with people who work for Jerry Reinsdorf. I mean, is that overstating
okay.
it? I don't think
yeah,
so.
No, I'm just saying that from the very beginning, this is going to be pushback and people looking to see and observing what it is. And when there are things that don't work out, when there are quote unquote mistakes, as he put it, where it didn't work out, he is going to get the brunt of it. The reality of that game was, how did the White Sox get down 5-0 in that game?
Defensive error, a Jake Berger bobble, a mistake in the field by a team that continues to be fundamentally challenged.
Okay, thank you. So what I'm saying is, you know, and I love Berger, and I think Berger is starting to be one of the most popular White Sox players just because of his big clutch hits, and also the fact that that hustle yesterday, beating out a double play ball, started that inning where they ended up winning that ball game with the 5-run rally. But the reality is that game, 5-0, was set up by Berger's error, and also an error of commission and an error of omission, not charging a ball by Trey Turner, understanding the circumstance, extending that inning and making that a big inning for them. So the reality is that you have players who have underperformed. You have a team that has had a tremendous amount of injuries to impactful players. A lot of teams do. The White Sox aren't the only one. But the reality is that looking at the La Russa situation, when things go bad and when he does make a mistake, and it's apparent that turned out to be a mistake, it's going to be, cancel culture all the way. I mean, it's like, you made that mistake. All right, we don't like you from the beginning. We want you gone.
Okay. That's
I mean,
well,
is that fair?
I respect your opinion. It is fair because it's a point of view that I don't think we have heard a lot of on this radio station, and maybe doesn't exist throughout the city. But here's where I stand, and I don't necessarily think it has anything to do with cancel culture. This is just my opinion, and I want to be consistent with what I said yesterday. I think that the other reality is that the White Sox are on the verge of a championship. The window is wide open, Bruce. And I think that if you doubt that, they don't, because they have told us that throughout the entire offseason since they lost to the Astros. Frankly, before that point, going back to the day that they hired Tony La Russa, why did they get rid of Rick Renteria? Why did they go? Why was he not considered the guy able to take them to the next step? Because Tony La Russa was available, and Jerry Reinsdorf identified him as that guy. So that's
no.
Premise.
I don't think that's correct, David. I don't think that's correct.
How is that wrong?
Because Renteria was mishandling pitching. Both Rick Hahn, Kenny Williams, and Jerry Reinsdorf acknowledged the fact that they didn't like how he was handling the pitching, and he was going to be gone. Okay. La Russa came after that. Okay.
Okay.
That came long afterwards.
All right.
Okay?
Fine. So you correct for the record. Okay. I don't even need to go that far back. When the White Sox were prepared to hire a World Series caliber manager in A.J. Hinch, my sense is, my understanding is, Jerry Reinsdorf intervened. And Jerry Reinsdorf made this call over the judgment, squashing the input of his executives who were hired to make that hire. So this is the point.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something that's coming up. And if you hire Tony La Russa to provide you a strategic advantage, it's been the opposite since he was hired. The Sox are always operating from a strategic disadvantage, it seems. The acumen and awareness that you hired to put them over the top, that's been flawed from day one. And this just is a situation that's been magnified and underscores it.
I don't see it. I do see we've actually jumped from one topic to the more important topic, which is La Russa the right manager for this team? Okay.
Okay.
So I'm with you on that. As far as his success or lack of success, I think they won a division last year. Did they not?
They did. They won 93 games.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think they had an injured pitching staff from the All-Star break on that was really not one of the top quality teams in baseball when they got into the playoffs. I believe they were under 500 because of a lot of that from the All-Star break on, or right at 500 from the All-Star break on last year. And pretty much right there right now.
But Bruce, even the most ardent Tony La Russa supporters have to acknowledge this has not been a smooth operation, that there have been situations that have come up and there have been examples that are easy to cite. I mean, we don't need to go through them all, but they have accumulated now to the point where this has not gone according to plan. I respect the fact they won a weak division, but they weren't at the elite level last year during the playoffs that they needed to be. And the understanding this year was that that team was going to be different and this year was going to be special. Right now, not that different, not that special.
Well, why is it? Is it Tony La Russa or is it the injuries and the players not playing up to their ability?
There have been injuries. Those have to be factored in. And when you have injuries right. And you are compromised and you have a roster, you want your manager to try to overcome as many deficiencies and to compensate for that as possible. And I just don't
think How do you do that? You have Grandal. You have Abreu up until the last 2 weeks. You have Garcia, okay. You have Moncada. None of these guys have played up to their baseball card, their numbers. None of them. You have Eloy out for the year. You have Anderson, or has been out most of the year. You have Anderson, who is not who is hurt, and obviously the igniter of the offense and the juice of the team out. Again, no one should feel sorry for the White Sox, but let's look at the reality of the situation. Some of the guys that are playing in the lineup are backup players in the major leagues. That's what they are. They're not supposed to be playing every day, and they haven't gotten it done. Gavin Sheets had a wonderful last month of the season last year for the White Sox, helped them enormously. Failed to get it done this year, back in the minor leagues right now. So there are a number of things happening that have nothing to do with Tony La Russa. Am I defending La Russa's decision to walk Trey Turner 1 and 2? No, I'm not. I believe the count was wrong. Now, I'll ask you this question, David.
Okay.
After the wild pitch, okay, and you know Muncy has struggled all year, at what count would you consider walking Turner, knowing that his average has been so great? With 1-2 counts, with any counts, and the fact that, is it 2-2? Is it 3-1? Is it 3-2? When do you give him the pass?
I am not a Hall of Fame baseball manager, but you asked the question, I'll give you what I would have done and how I would have approached it. I would have nibbled at the corners. I would have tried to, intentionally walked Trey Turner. I would have tried to get him to chase. It's 1 and 2. You've got 2 strikes. You're 1 strike mm-hmm. away from ending the inning. You're 1 strike away from avoiding the catastrophe that followed. I would have shown Max Muncy a little bit more respect because, yeah, he has started slowly. Yes, this year he hasn't hit lefties. Historically, though, that's not the case. And historically, when you look back at every full season that Max Muncy has played of the last 3 or 4, he's a 35 home run guy. And, oh, by the way, if you're paying attention in the Sox dugout, he doubled his last time up. So he wasn't as bad as he was made out to be when you walk Trey Turner with 2 strikes. So that's what I would have done.
We're talking
Bruce.
About Sousa facing him at this point. A left-hander, a specialist.
Don't like the pitcher. Change pitchers. Don't set yourself up by walking somebody with 2 strikes. Bruce, I understand where you're coming from. I just wonder this, and this is there's a lot of things I wonder, but as much as we have people that will defend Tony La Russa, and I understand his resume, I'm not defending him here. Well, you're defending the idea that he is the right. I'm saying that I question whether or not he's the right manager for the White Sox to take this team as far as he can go.
I love the idea. I love the conversation. And I think we should keep moving it forward. 312-644-6767. Chime in. If not Tony La Russa, who would you like managing the Chicago White Sox? David, I'll ask you the same question.
Well, okay, before we get to that point, I want to ask you this. The audience that matters is the one in the clubhouse. And it frankly doesn't even matter who the people that work at 35th and Shields, the executives. It's a one man decision. This is a Jerry Reinsdorf, I think, call. But do the players lose any sort of respect? Do they have any credibility issue with their manager after an example like that? Because we heard from the Dodgers, and they were laughing at this. They were sort of chuckling at the idea. We saw around baseball what people had to say. How do you think, Bruce, you were out there yesterday, the players really feel about the decision Tony La Russa made?
I think a lot of them think it was a mistake. I think a lot of people, because why was it a mistake? Because it didn't work out. Why was it a mistake? Because it was 1-2. Was it a mistake ever to walk one of the best players in baseball, one of the hottest players in baseball? No. The count itself didn't register with most people, okay?
Right.
Tony was anxious after the wild pitch to get to Sousa against Muncy, not mess with one of the top players in the game right now, rather deal with a player that's been struggling from the left side against a young left-handed pitcher that's done really well against lefties. But the reality is he's done well against righties and maybe even better. So that's not, that's the numbers don't necessarily support it. What I'm saying here is if the pushback is so great, mm-hmm. why is the pushback so great? And what is the result that's going to satisfy White Sox Nation? What is going to satisfy people who watch the game? Will it be the firing of Tony La Russa and the replacement of blank? Okay.
Right.
I want to know that. I want this story advanced. Okay. I don't want to, we will talk for 2 hours about Ozzie's opinion. La Russa is going to come back and we have sound from him yesterday talking about it as well. I'm as interested as anybody out there.
Okay. We'll play that game mm-hmm. because this is what we do. It's a conversation. And with conversations, if you have a problem, you need to offer a solution. I would tell you that it's highly unrealistic, and it is just conjecture when you say, okay, is either Joe Maddon or Joe Girardi a better choice? Because that's not going to happen, even though I would prefer either guy. Now, A.J. Pierzynski, who our guy Sully wrote about very well, and was in town on Thursday, ironically enough, was in the booth and also talked to reporters. Paul Sullivan wrote a great column in the Tribune Friday morning, wondering whether or not A.J. Pierzynski would be an alternative there. I would take that. I would go with that. I would see what that happens. But I think the obvious choice is the guy we talked to on Friday morning, and the guy we get a chance to hear every day in NBC Sports Chicago pregame and postgame, Ozzie Guillen. If the White Sox changed managers and hired Ozzie Guillen to go the rest of the way and to provide a spark that this team desperately needs, I think a lot of people publicly would be totally on board with it from a popularity standpoint. But I also think from a baseball acumen standpoint, it's easy to justify. He's got a World Series ring, for goodness sake.
312-644-6767. Do you like David's premise? Should the White Sox move on from La Russa? Are we stuck on this incident as not really being the topic? Because I don't believe it is. I believe the topic is the team is playing poorly. It's underachieving. Should the manager at this point wear it? 312-644-6767. And David,
Bruce,
there's no dancing around this. There's no dancing around.
You just nudged me in a direction I wasn't ready to go yet. But you just nudged me. Okay. It's great to be back.
It's really the crux of it, isn't it?
It is. It is. Yeah. I love it. It's great. You know what? It's a fascinating conversation. We're going to continue it. We're here until 11 o'clock. We have a great show ahead. And I'm looking forward to our conversation in a few minutes with Jason Benetti, who was on the call when all of this happened and has been there every day and every step along the way. Looking forward to his perspective. Looking forward to yours, too, as well. Call us, text us, let us know. We're here inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Now, wait a second.
They're going to intentionally walk him.
On 1 and 2?
Yep.
Can you explain that to me?
I would think you don't want Turner to do any more damage, and you want to take advantage of the lefty-lefty.
Typically, at 2 strikes, the league batting average is quite low.
Oh, yeah. It is that.
When was the last time you saw somebody intentionally walked on 1 and 2?
Didn't happen often.
Get 2 strikes, Tony!
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock. Thank you to NBC Sports Chicago for that highlight from Thursday's White Sox-Dodgers game, and that was the voice of Jason Benetti, a familiar one to everyone in Chicago, in Chicago sports, and across the country as he continues to go this weekend. I believe Peacock, he'll call the Guardians and the A's game on Sunday morning, and we're lucky to have him join us now. Guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Jason. How are you?
Morning, David. Morning, Bruce. How you doing?
Doing well. Jason, you were all of us, I think, watching that, and I think you handled that well, as long with Steve Stone. Obviously, Thursday, a very awkward situation, watching this all unfold. And when you said, can you explain that to me, to Steve, I think you spoke for everybody watching. As you hear that, as you look back, how would you describe, you know, in real time, what was going through your mind as that unfolded?
Well, the first thing I thought was, hey, did he get hit? Was there was there something else that was by rule called there? Because you just don't see that intentional walk on that count. Like, it's a very, very rare thing. So when I said, wait a second, and I, you know, Steve came in with the intentional walk, I was like, are they intentionally walking him? And they were. And so, you know, I was like, well, is there something here that maybe Steve has seen over the course of 50 plus years in the game that is for some reason beyond my reach here? I didn't think so, but I was like, wow, this is not something you see terribly often. So off we went. The good news about baseball season is that you play again tomorrow, and then tomorrow, and then tomorrow. And it's like kind of billboards on a highway that if you stare at one too long, even if it's really memorable for you, you're probably going to go into a guardrail.
Jason, pleasure having you on. Thanks for joining us. My question to you on La Russa is, do you feel, and again, I think you have as good a finger on the pulse of White Sox Nation as anybody, having grown up here, White Sox fan, having now, you know, one of the plum jobs in the game as an announcer for the White Sox on television. Do you feel when the White Sox win that La Russa gets any credit for any of that? Or is there a tremendous amount of pushback still from the very beginning because of the Tony hiring and how that went down?
You know, credit is such a, it's such a moving target, because I think baseball season, like, in the end, did you win the whole thing or didn't you? Like, I think it's very ephemeral what's happening with people giving credit, because if you're 27 and 29, there's not a whole lot of credit to be given out to anybody. And then if this team rattles off however many, I mean, the Joe Maddon situation, I think, is extraordinarily instructive to anybody following baseball, because, like, you get in a season and you know it's one of 162, and you know 2 weeks are just 2 weeks, but sometimes 2 weeks look so bad that somebody wants to pull the trigger on a decision. And sometimes that's the right decision, and sometimes that's the really wrong decision. I know Joe felt like it was a really wrong decision, that it was rash for a team that had been going through injuries. So I think credit in mid-June is something that's just going to evaporate one way or the other anyway. So I, you know, I, it's really hard because I know, like, I want people. I used to watch the Sox every day and live and die with every day, because if you're playing, you might as well win, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't think there's anything to evaluate necessarily in the credit department now, because it's about what happens in October.
Joined by Jason Benetti here on The Score. And Jason, I'm curious, as you go around the league, and I think you're doing a terrific job on the Peacock Sunday morning broadcast, and it exposes you to a lot of different broadcasters you're working with, a lot of different environments. And when people inevitably, I'm sure, ask you about the White Sox, do you find your response being a consistent one? Do you have a reflex response because of your role in the booth, or because the more you travel, the more you expose to other teams, do you find yourself being even more objective? I'm just curious on how you answer that question when tomorrow morning somebody's going to say to you, "So what was that all about?" And where's your team headed? How do you typically answer that?
Yeah, I think it depends on the week, David. Honestly, I mean, it has been a wild run for this team, because it feels like every week and a half, there's a moment of, whoa, this isn't good, or, wow, here come the Sox, right? Like, that's what happens when you're 27 and 29, 20 and 28, like, you're hanging around 500. I think this has been one of the most intriguing teams in baseball, because they're dealing with real true expectations for, I guess you could say, the second time, even though last year came off that weird year. But I do think the answer is going to keep shape-shifting, too, because, like, you can't discount the schedule as it is right now either. Like, it's getting easier and it's getting more favorable for this team. But my answer, honestly, is, like, either whoa or, yeah, they look really good right now. I mean, when this team opened winning 2 of 3 against the Rays and Mariners after 2 of 3 against the Tigers, it's like, all right, off we go. And then there was that pocket of games against the AL Central that were not good at all. And I do think it's part injuries, but I also just think it's been a little bit of a cobblestone road for this team so far.
Jason Benetti joining us on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. And Jason, looking at this team in spring training and coming off of last year, and looking at it now, do you have a different opinion about what it's capable of? Because obviously, huge injuries have impacted this team. Some guys just not playing up to their potential for over a third of the season. Is there anything different about your thought process about the ability of this team to win a World Series from that time in spring training till now? Has your opinion changed at all?
No, because the no I say is how you ask that. Like, I still think they can win the World Series, absolutely, and I think it in part because of the Braves last year and the Nationals in 2019. Like, right. Baseball is 162, but if you get scorching hot late, which this team did early last year, I still think it's all right there. I mean, the playoffs are a couple games here and a couple games there, and if you get hot, you get hot. I know it generally exposes weaknesses, and the Sox have things they need to shore up, absolutely. But I don't think you would call me Pollyannish for saying that the team who's still favored by Vegas to win the AL Central has a chance to win the World Series. Like, I think that's on the table, but they do need to do things better in certain ways.
Whether it's making a move via trade, whether it's getting people back, do you feel like this is a to do what you just described? And I'm not ruling them out either. I think this is, you look at the talent, Jason, and it'd be foolish, I think, to write them off on June 10th or 11th. But do they have to make a move? Do they have to create a spark? Do they have to do something? And I don't think that necessarily the manager making the move there is going to happen. So it's almost like a hypothetical you can't even consider, but do they have to maybe make a trade to make something different happen?
Maybe. I mean, I don't think the deadline will go without anything for this team. But I also think, like, if Yasmani Grandal, like, last night, part of the eight runs was a Yoan Moncada RBI and a Yasmani Grandal couple of nice at-bats, along with runs driven in. So if you get that, and I know fans don't want to hear me say, well, that's like adding at the trade deadline. But added value is added value. And I'm not saying at the exclusion of deals or whatever it might be. But I think you need to have extra from somewhere, because the current level isn't enough to be more than two under at this moment. Like, you are what you are, and that's what they are record-wise at this point. So added value in certain places, and whether that's Lance Lynn, which I like, of the injuries, other than Tim Anderson, I think not having Lance Lynn and the way he carries himself and his level of success, those combine to make a very powerful personality in a clubhouse that can change the timber of what's going on. So I really do believe the Lance Lynn thing is huge for this team. And then you get Tim Anderson back and you start to feel like yourself again. Because I do think over the course of a season, sometimes teams don't feel like themselves and they don't act like themselves. And then when you get that back, whatever causes that, I think it can turn on a dime. We've seen it over and over again in this sport.
Jason, on another note, you are considered one of the top broadcasters in the game. I want to know who had the most impact on Jason Benetti as far as looking at his career, what he wanted to do, how he went about it. Who had the biggest impact on you as far as broadcasters go? And who right now do you enjoy listening to? And I imagine there's more than one.
Yeah, a couple of the guys that answer the first question are the second question answer as well. Ian Eagle, who does CBS and Turner and the Nets in Brooklyn. Ian is, number one, a fantastic announcer, and two, just a riotously funny guy when you have dinner with him. But he also brings some of that to the telecast. And Sean McDonough is that way, too. I mean, he's got such a powerful, commanding presence, but he also can work with partners like Billis and Raftery on the Big Monday stuff. Like, that was my wheelhouse once I got to college. I mean, Hawk is decidedly on the list because I've heard Hawk do more games than anybody else in my life, and it's not close because I was growing up watching Hawk and Wimpy. And, you know, Wimpy's in there, too, even though he's not a play-by-play announcer, just his sensibility of, hey, this is fun. Let me go to the ballpark every day and enjoy it. In terms of people who I really enjoy right now, like, it's a lot of the, you know, Ian and Sean McDonough and Brian Anderson from the Brewers and Turner, I think, is magnificent. My old partner from Syracuse and AAA, Kevin Brown, has taken over the play-by-play guy on TV for the Orioles. And he also just did the Women's College World Series for ESPN. I think he's truly one of the greatest young announcers in the country. Adam Amin here, he and Stacy with the Bulls are fantastic. So that's a short snippet of who. But Ian Eagle and Sean McDonough and Costas too, growing up, are three of the big ones for me.
Quickly before we let you go, Jason, I have to ask this. Thursday night, after what happened at the field and the controversy that unfolded, the White Sox had an event at the Field Museum, Beyond the Diamond. What was that like? Was that awkward at all because of what happened, or was that just a night to kind of get away from everything and it wasn't really an issue?
I mean, it's there. What I would say is the MVP was Pat McGann, the comedian, because when Pat got on stage, he basically turned whatever mood might have been like, oh, woe is the team for today. Like, it's hanging in a room, right? Like, you can feel something like that. And then Pat got on stage and he just went through like a series of White Sox jokes that basically tore all of that down if anybody was feeling it. Nobody at my table was really talking about that day. They were just talking about the season as a whole. But Pat got on stage and he did some material that killed in one room, and because it was a white, like, you're not going to get great laughs on Brooks Boyer content in a lot of rooms, but in that room, it killed. Pat was remarkable.
And so are you guys every single night. It's must watch television. It's so much fun. Just last night, just, you know, watching and listening to you guys go up and back on Dave, your cameraman, following that woman and scaring her. That was, I mean, it was so subtly funny. And, you know, that's just the part of the broadcast that I really, truly enjoy so much, Jason. So thanks for joining David and I. And it's always a pleasure to listen to you and also have you on our show.
Thanks, Jason.
Guys, thanks, David. Thanks, Bruce. Really appreciate that.
Jason Benetti, voice of the White Sox, NBC Sports Chicago, also the voice of Peacock Network Baseball on Sunday mornings. Tomorrow, Bruce, I think he's doing Guardians and A's.
That's correct.
Can he bring Frankie Montas back with him to Chicago?
That would be nice.
That would be any room in the overhead compartment? I mean, Frankie Montas, that's the kind of move you think the Sox might need to make. Maybe there's something else you have in mind. Let's keep the conversation going. 312-644-6767 inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Well, you know, right now, you know, it's just, I don't have any doubt. Tony La Russa will leave Chicago when you want to. Like, okay, guys, I got enough, or whatever it is, whatever reason is. I don't think that decision would have come from people from the front office. You know what I mean? Even a couple of the best managers in the game, supposed to be the best manager in the game, they just got fired last week. And I mean, Joe and both Joe, Giardi and Madden. And all of a sudden, you think, like, oh, those guys got fired. Why Tony can't get fired?
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Haugh, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock. That was Ozzie Guillen, who made an emergency appearance on the Mullin Haugh Show Friday morning. Bruce, usually a Wednesday guest, came in on Friday to share his perspective on what happened Thursday. Great to talk to Jason Benetti. We're going to talk to Danny Mendick, the infielder for the White Sox, at 10:15. Looking forward to that conversation, Bruce. What did you think about the way Ozzie framed Tony La Russa's situation in terms of when he goes, it will be because Tony decides it's time and nobody else?
No, I don't necessarily believe that. I believe that, you know, when it comes time, I believe Jerry Reinsdorf will listen to Rick Hahn. He'll listen to Kenny Williams. He will not just go by saying, look, Tony's here for life, meaning mine, and he's staying here as long as I want him to. I don't believe that he's going to do that. I think hiring him was different. I think he felt that this was the right guy, that he had let him go a long time ago, way in advance, and he felt for a team that Kenny and Rick have built to a championship caliber team, that he was the right guy to take it the rest of the way. He didn't want to wait for anybody else to manage the team and look at. He wanted to have the comfort of someone he knew that had won championships and that he had a relationship with. Well and good, but I don't think he would stand in the way of his executives letting Tony La Russa go. With two caveats. One, give me the reason why. Okay, number one. And number two is always, if you're going to fire him, tell me who's going to replace him, okay? Because we need to have a replacement, and I need to understand why he's going to be better than the manager or coach we have now. That's standard procedure for Jerry Reinsdorf.
I have a totally different opinion on that, but we'll share it later. I want to get to the phone callers because they've been waiting for a long time, and the Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Mike is in Plano. Good morning, Mike.
Hey, guys. You know, David, what I appreciate about you is you've kept your criticism of Tony La Russa strictly to the field and to the baseball operations, which is completely fair game. Where I've had problems is ever since he was hired, you've had certain people in the media and some of your colleagues at the station take his hiring very personally, to the point where they're attacking his politics, his personal beliefs. He had a guy comparing him yesterday to a dinosaur at the Field Museum. Now, that's a bridge too far, and Because when you talk about Tony, you don't want the you want the fans to disapprove of the job he's doing, but not hate the man, because he doesn't deserve that. And one thing, David, you're talking about is bringing in Ozzie Guillen. Here's the thing. Ozzie brought a lot of negative headlines himself. Now, he had that one magical year of 2005, but he only made the postseason one other time in his 8 years of manager. His team's usually flamed out in the end. And Ozzie himself has described himself as a Tony La Russa old-school type of baseball guy, so I just don't see where that would be an upgrade. If we're going to get a new manager, I would like to bring in somebody that's from outside the organization completely, that has no past affiliation with the White Sox whatsoever. That way we can get somebody that can look at this team in a real sobering way.
Mike, thanks for the phone call and the comments. That's an interesting perspective that you look at Ozzie and consider him an old-school manager as well, Bruce. I look at Ozzie and I see somebody with a World Series ring who hasn't managed in a very long time for reasons that are difficult to understand at this point in time. But I also look at a guy whose growth is obvious, both, I would assume, in the dugout and outside of that, in these public forums and the platforms that he enjoys. Ozzie Guillen, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think even he would acknowledge, I don't want to say grown up a lot, but he certainly has tempered his approach to the point where it's a lot more professional than maybe it used to be, and I think he would benefit from that. And a team, any team that would hire him, whether it's the White Sox or anybody else, would see that firsthand.
Well, there's a, you know, from the people won't relate to this, but Ozzie hasn't managed for as long as La Russa hadn't managed. Okay, Ozzie hadn't managed almost 10 years now. So from that perspective, you know, the time element, social media has changed the entire world and the way that people express and look at their opinions. Okay, so I think Ozzie and everybody else is very aware of everything that you say is automatically in the world a second later. You know, it's everywhere. Okay, so from that perspective, I think Ozzie's a different guy. I think we all are different because of social media and the way things are reported, the way things go on out there. But from my opinion on you know, bringing in a new manager, keep in mind when people say, "Well, Levine, Jerry's never going to fire Tony La Russa." Guess what? He's the only owner that has been involved ever that did fire Tony La Russa. Okay, he fired him along with Hawk Harrelson in 1986. Okay, so from that perspective, he has the White Sox normally don't fire managers during the season. The only other one during Jerry's tenure was Gene Lamont in 1995. Everyone else has completed a season before they were let go. So I don't think that Jerry would stand in the way of Rick and Kenny if they wanted to make a change, if they presented the premise based on why and also who do you want there.
I have a response to that, but we have to break. We've got a big hour ahead. Danny Menick, 10:15. Your call is 312-644-6767. Inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.